Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, you know, I used to be a school teacher for a very short period of time, right after I'd graduated with my ultra-useful degree in creative writing.
Did you have a tweed jacket?
I did not. I got some cords later on, but at the time I did not have much in the way of scholarly dress clothes, you know. But yeah, I taught high school English for a little bit, and I had some wonderful kids that were not necessarily all that inspired. But, you know, I went in there and tried the best I could. And, of course, I ended up encountering some cheating because there were a number of people in these classes that really did not care. And it was the challenge, and probably a challenge that, you know, I ultimately was not up to, was to try and get them interested about English, about learning in any way, shape, or form. And ultimately, was some of these kids just weren't going to listen to any of it. They'd rather sleep. They'd rather, you know, do nothing. They'd rather pass notes. But then you would encounter kids that are equally less interested in achieving in the class until it comes down to the final minute, until the test paper is on the desk, and then they want to succeed.
And then they become Machiavellian freaks.
Right. And then they start pulling out the cheating techniques. And it always, like, it would blow my mind a little bit when someone puts a tremendous amount of effort into some notes that they're going to, you know, hide in their sleeve or their, you know, so you couldn't get them to take notes during class, but they'll copy like whole pages of textbook onto the corner of their desk in pencil so they can erase it with like a licked palm if you come around. Cheating.
You saw the dark side, man. You saw the dark side of cheating, scholastic cheating.
Well, yeah. And it's interesting. And then that's why we're talking about it in this podcast. And we are talking, pretty much about academic cheating, scholastic cheating. We're not going to get into any kind of saucy soap opera stuff
here. No knocking boots cheating.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, everybody can relate to this, right? Cause who among us has not cheated at least once in some, fashion, right?
Yeah. If you haven't broken the rules, I'm willing to bet you've bent them at some point, in your favor. I mean, it's just what we do. It's really a part of nature. I mean, that sounds like I'm defending it. You know, I wasn't cheating on that test, man. It's a part of nature.
Okay.
But it's just part of the evolution and maintenance of cooperative behavior.
Right. If you're going to live in a society, you're going to have to adhere to the social contract, which says, please don't cheat because, you know, otherwise the rest of us get shafted, right? Or at least that's sort of the bare bones basics behind it.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a balance though, right? It's like in many cases, we can't all cheat because the system will collapse.
Right.
But some people are going to be willing to take the risks to reap the rewards of cheating.
Right. And if you're out there and you think, no, I'm not a cheater, it's just that's not me, I want to say, what if we told you that your beliefs and values were not actually fixed and the moral code that you carry with you and define yourself by is actually kind of like a flotilla on the sea of circumstances around you? Because that's what we're going to talk about today. And this is just kind of a slippery slope. What we think about in terms of our morality can sometimes be very different from the actual reality of our morality. That I'm not going to start rapping, don't worry.
Yeah, so let's hit some stats here. I have some interesting numbers here. And this is, first let's start with the U.S. We have a number of listeners in the U.S. We are in the U.S. and we attended school in the U.S. So these numbers apply to all of us. On most U.S. college campuses, over 75% of the students admit to some cheating. You look at internet plagiarism. You see about 10% in 1999, 41% in 2001. Majority of these U.S. students, 68%, think that cheating is, quote, not a serious issue. And you see cheating rise from 11% in 1963 to 49% in 1993. And this is based on self-reported stats from state universities.
Right, which is interesting that it's risen that much.
but then take a look at U.S. high schools, 74% are into serious test cheating, like serious.
Your anecdote is corroborated.
Yeah, 72% are into cheating on written assignments, and over half are generally into some level of plagiarism on written assignments using the internet.
Yeah. And I do have to look at that internet plagiarism and have to say that 10% in 1999, early adopters of plagiarism online. Obviously, 41% in 2001 is because everybody's using the internet then, right?
It's interesting to look at this jump you see from high school to college. And there are a number of reasons you can lay out for that. But to me, anyway, when I look back at my own scholastic career, my own academic career, you know, high school was more about like us versus them about like school, when you're
the
in high school.
The kids versus the teachers?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Like when you're in high school, you know, unless you're a really serious student, which I'm, for the most part, I was not. School feels like this thing that is forced upon you. It is a thing done to you.
It happens to
you.
Quit,
yeah. Quit doing school to me, world, because I have games of magic I need to play. You know, that kind of thing. I was an exciting kid.
Well, and if you're a kid like I was, offended by a lot of different aspects of school, like particularly that I had to ask to go to use the restroom. I thought that was insane.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can imagine you being very stubborn about that.
Right. Why would I just, I mean, can you not trust me to go and empty my bladders on my own? But for a lot of kids too, it's just about surviving school, right?
Right.
So unfortunately, at least here in the U.S., we don't have a great, sort of system in place where mm-hmm. you really are trying to, kids are getting engaged and it's more of a, hey, we're all in this together. Like you said, it's very us versus them.
Yeah. It's us versus them. Your hormones are doing all sorts of crazy stuff. You look at the world differently.
Mm-hmm.
Your immediate concerns are going to be, or in many cases are more related to your interpersonal conflicts, or just having fun. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And then in college, hopefully, this shifts over more towards school is not something done to me, but school is something that I need to use or am using to better myself,
mm-hmm.
to gain some foothold in the world, and so you have a little more investment into it.
Right, and you're making some choices on your own, too, about what sort of path you want to pursue.
Right, and then, of course, being into the subject is another big thing. Because, I mean, I remember back in high school, there were subjects I was really into.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't about to cheat on or to think about cheating even on an ancient history class that I had. Because I just loved that thing. It was
right.
Just like all these, you know, it's like ancient battle after ancient battle and kings and rebellions. I mean, that stuff was awesome. Or, you know, or literature in English, I was always really into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the temptation would arise in things I guess it would arise in math class, but it quickly becomes obvious that you can't really even think about cheating in math because you have to solve this problem they give you. And how are you going to do that?
Well, you would look over to whoever is sitting on your right or left.
See, but the thing was, that was always too risky for me. Like, I was not willing to take the risk of visually looking over at somebody's desk and copying off of them.
Yeah, okay. You know? Well, we're going to talk about the psychological factors in a moment and this sort of risk assessment. But we have established that we in the United States are a bunch of cheaters.
Yeah, what's the rest of the world doing, right?
Yeah, yeah. For instance, what's Russia doing?
Well, Russia, apparently they are really into sharing notes.
Yeah.
Talking in class is okay. It's not even hidden. The goal is to bring the whole class level up.
Okay.
And bribes are routinely expected for grades.
Wow. So a teacher would expect a bribe to come in?
I guess.
Okay. That's interesting.
I mean, I don't know if I was ever offered a bribe per se when I was teaching, but I did have this one situation where there's this girl that's just super failing English.
Mm-hmm.
Like she couldn't have tried harder to fail it. And I wanted these kids to pass. So I was giving them all sorts of opportunities for extra credits. Like, here, read this short story and you'll get extra credit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, write something about it. Do this and you'll get some extra credit. And well, let me help you pass this class.
Right.
And then, of course, it's the last minute and like this girl comes up and is like creepily saying like, I'll do anything to pass, blah, blah, blah. And
yeah.
I was just like, ugh, get away.
Ugh, go read a short story.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
But I also remember encountering someone, this was not during my teaching, this was in school, but I remember encountering somebody who had been to school in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And they had told me that in their experience in Germany, cheating was more expected.
Mm-hmm.
And from the teachers. So, like, you were expected to try and cheat, but then the teachers knew this, so they're just making everything harder. Now, I don't know, and we'll get into this a little bit too, I don't know to what extent that person was rationalizing their own individual
right.
cheating philosophy. If they were, like, saying, well, they know we're cheating, they're just making it harder on me, and in fact, if I don't cheat to keep up, I'm doing myself a disservice.
Yeah, yeah.
But some of the stats we were looking at, though, they said that in German schools, the sharing of answers is common. And it's understood that it is very much a student versus teacher situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so if you didn't share, it would be a social taboo.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So you'd be sort of forced to, or you'd be shunned. In Mexico, sharing is common, but students will deny this.
Okay.
That's sort of interesting. Professors do not expect citations and papers. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
Because you could just make up anything, really. You know, that sounded reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they're just more into, like, hey, at least they're trying. I don't know. You can get crazy with citation recommendations from teachers. But
yeah.
Costa Rica, this is interesting. teamwork the rule in personal and academic life, including supporting those who do not contribute to the group.
Okay.
We've all been in those situations where you have like a group assignment.
Yeah.
And there's, on one end of the spectrum, there's the person who's like super gung-ho. They're mm-hmm. leaders. They're, this is what we're going to do. This is when we're going to meet to do it. This is the work that's involved. And mm-hmm. then you have that one person that's just riding coattails.
Yeah, there's the ne'er-do-well.
Yeah.
And everybody gets mad because they're like, you're not doing anything. So, but of course, you have to go ahead and band together because your grade is going to be affected by this person.
Which
right?
makes sense. I mean, having been to Costa Rica, it's... And I'm not pretending to have any deep, like a deep cultural understanding of the country because I went on vacation there for a week. But you do get a huge sense of togetherness and this
it's
idea
very
of like,
community oriented.
Yeah, like yeah. let's pull this country up by our bootstraps. Let's start caring about the environment. Let's get some tourist dollars in here. Let's do it.
Yeah. So sell these monkeys.
I did not have an opportunity to buy a monkey when I was there.
No, I mean like the idea of the monkeys.
Okay. It's like, yes. Let's save the environment. Let's sell monkeys.
I didn't come home with a lemur or anything. China, I mean, there's bullets here. There's all sorts of crazy things going on in China in terms of cheating. Students actually openly admit that cheating is a way of life. Intellectual property is a foreign concept. And, of course, we've seen this before in some of the products that, DVDs that you can get over there mm-hmm. for 50 cents, a dollar, whatever. They're kind of ripped off. In fact, didn't you tell me that there was a fake iPod store that sprung up in one of the malls there?
That made the news a few months back. But even more amazing was, I think it was the fifth Harry Potter book. I could be wrong on this, Potter fans. But everyone was eagerly anticipating the next Harry Potter book. And
yeah.
then it was out in China with this crazy cover that had like the dragon from Sleeping Beauty on it. And it was like, wow. I never found out exactly like what it consisted of. Did someone like write a big fan fiction book? Did they just like download a bunch of fan fiction from the internet?
Like, I don't know. Took portions of it and then rewrote it. I mean,
because you got to put in some considerable work in there, even to fill a book that size up with nothing.
The big value for students in China is saving face and maintaining group harmony. Cheating is seen as a skill everyone should develop to succeed in the world. The world is corrupt. So this is like the basic thought process here.
Yeah, thus is the world. So,
yeah,
you know.
Which is, I mean, some people would say, well, that's a very realistic point of view right there. Burma students learn that it's sort of a task that's shared by a group. So it's not seen as cheating again so much. And the worst accusation in this culture is selfishness, pursuing your own goals at the expense of others.
So we've talked about some of the stats around cheating.
Mm-hmm.
We've discussed sort of our own personal takes on school, at an early age and then how it changed depending on if we were into a subject or if we were in college. And so it only makes sense now to discuss like why, as a people,
right.
as a culture, why do we cheat? Why do we attempt to, work the system in our favor and get by without putting as much
yeah.
work in?
What's going on in our minds that allows us to do this, even if it's sort of outside of what we think is our own moral code.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of different topics we can cover here. One is moral disengagement and another is motivated forgetting. And moral disengagement is described by psychologist Albert Bandura which is like the process by which people pervert their own sense of self and their sense of right and wrong in order to give into a questionable temptation. Okay. So you become morally disengaged from what you're doing.
Okay.
Yeah, we've seen this in many instances. And then motivated forgetting, we'll talk about that in a moment. Dr. Lisa Hsu at Harvard University conducted a study in which one group of students were left to their own devices to report their score while another group's was calculated by a proctor. And when students were given a more morally permissive environment, it was found that they were more apt to cheat. Which, okay, that's no surprise, right? The sticking point is that before and after they were given a questionnaire to gauge their degree of moral engagement. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the questionnaire would sort of ask them like, how do you feel about, these certain circumstances and your own morality and so on and so forth. And Hsu found that the students who cheated exhibited greater amounts of moral disengagement, pointing to the fact that doing the deed, actually cheating, can lead to sort of like a tangle web we weave once we begin to deceive, right?
Right.
So once you do it, you're more apt to continue doing it, at least in some sort of short term, right? I mean, are we talking about hours? Are we talking about months? That's not exactly defined. But, once you cross that line, it's a lot easier to do it again.
Right. And it's frequently pointed out that a lot of it comes down to risk calculation and risk evaluation. What am I to gain by cheating? Mm-hmm. What are my chances of being caught? And then if I'm caught, what are the consequences?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is Mr. Lamb the English teacher? Is he just going to fail me on the test? Well, I was going to fail anyway, right? So I might as well cheat. There's nothing wrong with that. How much trouble am I going to get in? I going to be, you know, sent to the principal's office? Am I going to have to sit outside? Like, I'm already on thin ice anyway. So,
right. If you had a history of sending kids to the principal's office for cheating, then maybe, you know, someone might say, oh, that's too much of a risk for me.
Some of the teachers there were still beating kids in the hallways with paddles.
That was Tennessee, right?
It was Tennessee.
No,
yeah.
I'm just kidding.
No,
we were in Georgia. I can't really
certain
make
teachers
fun.
Were known to be paddlers. And,
really?
Yeah.
I thought that like corporal punishment was like had gone, by the wayside.
I think there was 50s. Also a knowledge that certainly wasn't in elementary school. I think like all the teachers had like paddling was the ultimate punishment, and you know it was humiliating too because the kid would unless you like the kid was really hardened. There were some of those kids that didn't cry, but generally the kids that
they
got paddled
Catholic.
Were cried. Yeah,
they were used to the nuns.
but by high school, it kind of felt like maybe there was sort of a. It depended on who you were and what your like socioeconomic status was mm-hmm. somehow. Because it's kind of like the teachers who still paddled tended to be like the shop teachers and the, or coaches or, you know, like, and,
but they have the instruments to do it with.
Well, like to put it, I guess to frame it simply, it's like it was more of the country boy teachers mm-hmm. who still paddled and it was the country boys who got paddled. So I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's I've seen some studies on spanking and how it's a cultural phenomenon in some areas. So mm-hmm. that's very interesting about that.
I mean, I remember situations where it was like, and it would be like a study hall class I was in where the teacher was like, you keep that up, I'm going to have to paddle you. And the kid would keep up with it and then he'd sort of get paddled. And it was like this weird kind of like badge of honor for having been paddled. And then it was just kind of like businesses. It was like this weird attitude towards taking a relatively grown man out into the hallway and beating him on the buttocks with a large piece of wood.
That.
Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent.
I'm sorry
here.
You it's said buttocks, and I, you know how I am. It's my eighth grade mind.
The rump behind her.
So, I mean, but again, this is a social contract.
Yes.
That was entered to, and so there was some sort of like, okay, I accept that this
and it comes,
is part
and like I said, it comes down to risk evaluation. What
right.
are my chances of being caught? What are the consequences if I am, and what do I have to gain? And
and
for a number of people, the equation ends up saying, yes, I should cheat because there's more to gain than to lose in doing this.
Dr. Hsu also found this phenomenon called motivated forgetting. And students who read an academic honor code before cheating on a test had a harder time recalling details of it afterward, which is interesting, right? So they were sort of like, oh, that whole thing, that's really fuzzy. I can't quite remember. It was almost mm-hmm. like they're willing themselves to forget it so they could have some sort of excuse of, oh, I wasn't aware of that and I wouldn't have cheated. You know mm-hmm. I mean? That's the logic, right? But if they were made to sign the honor code rather than just passively read it beforehand, then the instances of cheating actually decreased. So that the passive versus the active of actually signing it and saying, okay, I agree that I understand this information would contribute to the less cheating.
Hmm.
So I don't know. Sort of interesting that there are certain stop gaps in your mind that happen. And this has also been found by a professor of behavioral economics at Duke University, Dr. Dan Ariely. He's also at MIT as well as the director of MIT Center for Advanced Hindsight. He's really interested in the bugs in our moral codes, and Enron inspired him to study cheating.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Turns out that a lot of people cheat a little bit. This is sort of one of his cursory findings. And in economic theory, cheating is a very simple cost-benefit analysis, okay? So, again, you talked about, like, what's the probability of getting caught? How much do I stand to gain from cheating? What kind of punishment is doled out? And he took all of that information, and he conducted several tests. And one, he gave test subjects 20 math problems to solve and told them that they'd all get paid cash for each correct answer. And then he gave them an impossible amount of time for them to actually answer these questions.
Uh-huh.
I think like 5 minutes or something. And so in other words, you couldn't get the full amount that you you might be able to get paid out, like maybe for 10 right answers.
Right.
You could maybe only do five. So that ensured that nobody could complete it in time. And then when the time was up, the control subjects were told to count their correct answers and collect their pay. Okay. So the test group, however, was told to shred their exams before reporting their totals. So you have two groups.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One that's counting up. The other one is essentially getting rid of the evidence
right.
before.
So they could
they
say
report.
Anything.
Yeah. They could say,
they could
yeah.
even say 10 and they would be like, do you have proof of that? Nope. Just shredded it. But I totally answered everything you did in an impossible amount of time.
Exactly. And so, you know, obviously he's trying to engage cheaters into cheating. So not surprisingly, the people who were shredding were cheating a lot more. But they only cheated by a small amount. Okay. So when I say small amount,
they
I
knew
mean,
better than to say 10 because they didn't want to be, they didn't want to be that obvious.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Like there was some sort of margin of cheating that was acceptable to him. So mm-hmm. he looked into that situation and thought, well, I'm going to vary the amount that I pay them. So, you know, I'm going to conduct this experiment again. At 10 cents, at 50 cents, at a dollar. And what he found is that the highest, the dollar per question, the actually cheating went down.
Huh.
So again, there's some sort of like prescribed, or inscribed, morality mm-hmm. inherent in cheating.
Like this is for a dollar. This is serious business. Like cheating for a nickel. That's no big deal. I mean, it's kind of, it reminds me a lot of these cost analyses that you see, regarding office theft.
Yeah.
Where individuals will steal a pen or steal a printer paper or whatever, because they're looking at it as like, that's a pen. That's some printer paper. That's that's a computer mouse. That's pretty cheap. But the same individual that would rationalize that would not say, take off with a laptop or just rob the soda refrigerator blind. There are levels at which it is acceptable and at which it is not acceptable in the thief's mind.
Well, and that's what Ariely was looking at, too. I mean, he was sort of like, okay, how does this play out when I put a six-pack of a soda in the dorm refrigerators?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, those disappeared, like, in no time. But then he put a plate of six $1 bills in the refrigerator,
uh-huh.
and they just stayed there completely, you know, because – again, if I steal that $1, I'm stealing. But if I'm taking a Coke, I'm taking a Coke, right?
I've always found it interesting, the whole theft of office food. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because I think, this is a great place to work, but I think we have occasionally encountered some office food theft here, just in small amounts.
I will say, do not bring a fancy yogurt.
Oh, yeah?
Because there is one person in the office that I know will nab your yogurt, who really likes fancy yogurt.
Oh, a yogurt nabber.
Yeah, so now you know.
Well, on the opposite end of that spectrum, I once worked for a newspaper that had a press room in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And when I mean a press room, it's like we made the newspaper in the front. I was in the editorial department. And then in the back, the press room dudes would print the paper.
It's the old timey cut and paste.
Yeah, yeah, I was part of that. And some of the people who worked there were old timey. It was great. But there was a refrigerator shared by both departments, and it eventually just became common knowledge that on the weekends, if you happened to leave anything in the fridge, and I mean anything, like a half-eaten meal in a styrofoam container,
yeah.
those dudes in the back would emerge from their press room that did not smell of newspapers. Let's just say it had a very there was a certain herbal odor going on, and then they would just consume everything.
Herbal?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I think I know what you're talking about
yeah.
there. Are you
yeah.
talking about cannabis?
Yes, yes. That's what I'm suspecting.
Well, I mean, it's the weekend. Cannabis, they've got the munchies.
Exactly, yeah. So they would just eat everything in the refrigerator, like down to like half sandwiches and leftovers and like somebody's, mostly empty thing of peanut butter. It's kind of amazing. I love telling that story. But
I think it's funny that people continue to leave stuff there,
yeah.
knowing that like the cannabis munchies were going to occur over the weekend.
Now,
or maybe they didn't realize. Okay, yeah. So you see it in the workplace, you see it in college dorms with soda, right? But Ariely, he is obsessed with this idea of cheating, and so he conducts another experiment, and this is very similar to the other one where mm-hmm. he's got the group who is self-reporting.
Right.
You know, how many correct answers that they have. But in this group, he's got a bunch of Carnegie Mellon students.
Oh.
And he has, like 30 seconds into this, right? It's like very obvious this person is cheating. He stands up. He's got his Carnegie Mellon sweatshirt on and he says, I'm done. What do I do? And the person, in the study says, just go ahead and collect your money. And of course, lots of other people start going, yeah, me too. I'm done. and they're cheating as well. But what they found is that when they varied it by having the person wearing a University of Pittsburgh sweatshirt, right? Rivals, this is an outsider, right? This person is standing up with a University of Pittsburgh sweatshirt in a room full of Carnegie Mellon students, that the cheating actually went down. I think that it even said to null because people did not identify with that person. They were outside of their social group.
It again comes down to what is the moral climate, you know, and in an us versus them, what is the moral climate of us?
Right. Because
you don't want to be them.
Right. And so he kind of took all of this and he applied it to Enron, right? Because he's thinking like, how does this play out in the real world in financial circumstances where there's a lot of cheating going on?
Yeah.
And so he's saying, okay, here's a bunch of people who are engaged in systematic, widespread, planned accounting fraud in order to keep stock prices artificially high, as well as their credit rating. And think about stock and credit rates. These are now the stand-ins for money, just as, you know, the Cokes in the fridge were, or the soda in the fridge was. So there's an abstraction of money.
Mm-hmm.
So people are a little bit more apt to say like, oh, okay, it's just play money, right? It's just an idea of money that we're dealing with here. It's not big piles of cash that we're actually stealing. And he's also saying that you have a bunch of people in the actual industry who are identifying with each other. So again, we're looking at that same sort of university sweatshirt. Think of them, everybody working at Enron is wearing the same university sweatshirts, and saying, well, you know, if that person's doing it, then it must be okay. It's okay if I condone it, or I sort of look the other way, or even participate. And it's just really interesting because it turns out that this sort of fraud, something like $600 billion a year. So it's widespread.
Yeah.
And when you look at it that way, as this abstraction of money, and everybody's just sort of turning the other way, then it becomes much more problematic, right?
Yeah. Well, it also makes me think of various correctional institutions, you know, and just the idea that taking somebody for, say, a minor drug offense at a young age, putting them in a prison environment, and then, you know, acting surprised if they come out of that environment with the attitude, more of an attitude that the criminal behaviors are okay. You know?
Right, because in some respects, there's a permissive environment, no matter what that is.
Right.
You know, across the board, whether it's a culture or organization, a business, there are things you can get away with.
Yeah.
Right. But let's talk about creativity.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So this comes down to the same dude we were talking about earlier, Dan Ariely, who, again, was doing another test where he had, and this time it was like 100 people, and he was doing a similar thing where everybody takes a test, they're filling in their multiple choice, and then they're asked to transfer their answers to another sheet, which, by the way, just because of a printing error, it has the answers on it. So don't, the answers are on the sheet you're transferring to, but don't change from your originals.
Again, this is self-reporting, for the individual.
Right. So, yeah, will the person cheat, will they not? And then they compare everything afterwards. And they were testing creative and supposedly non-creative people. And he found that the more creative the person, like the higher level of cheating involved in this particular study.
So creative people are a bunch of cheaters.
Well, it's interesting. What's really fascinating about this is that it comes down to something we've talked about before, like the power of storytelling, really. Like the creative mind getting engaged in the creation of a story, the creation of a character with various things set upon them. I think I've made the argument that I feel like sometimes creative people, and especially writers, tend to be more depressed, more miserable in some conditions because their brain is more apt to create a me story, you know? Like something bad happens, and then they instantly create that story where about how something bad happened to me, how something bad is happening to me. And to a large extent, that's how our memories form. We've talked about using, say, like Tetris games to immediately stave off post-traumatic stress. Because before that, you can actually form that me story and take what has just happened and form it into this series of events and store it away, you're interfering with Tetris.
Okay.
Anyway, the argument here with the creative individuals is that when it comes to cheating, they're more apt to create a story, again, where I am the central character, but in this story, I have a rationale for cheating.
That's what I was about to say too, is that, you know, we've done so much research on pattern recognition, mm-hmm. and a lot of times it takes a great amount of creativity to see patterns where there are none.
Right.
And of course you can rationalize with pattern recognition.
Right. It, like the German individual that I talked to that one time, for instance, you know, I mentioned earlier, it's like, I'm not sure to what extent what they were telling me was true,
mm-hmm.
or is that just their me story,
mm-hmm.
that rationalized their cheating. It's like, well, I come from a culture that, where it's okay. Or in the school, the teachers know I'm cheating. So it's fine. If I'm not cheating, I'm cheating myself by not rising to the occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you can imagine any number of cases where someone's like, well, the class is too hard, so I should cheat to make up the difference. Or I've had to put up with other things in my life. I've been at a disadvantage, or I had a rough week. You know, prior to the test. So cheating is okay for me.
Or, I mean, I was just thinking about this too. Like, if you got too much cash back from an exchange at a retailer.
Yeah.
And you might say that, and I read this too, something like you might not like that retailer and say, oh, that's the man.
Yeah.
Like, they don't need this,
that's
know,
a big,
dollar
yeah,
back.
Big box store. They don't need this money. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Likewise, I'm in the office theft case where people will end up doing it for petty reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it gave me too much work to do. I'll take that out with pen theft.
I'll take your yogurt.
Yeah.
but yeah, I mean, Airlie was basically saying that this sort of morality about cheating is really about the mirror that reminds us of who we are at the point where it matters. So again, signing an honor code before you take a test is going to be much more effective in reminding you about, you know, what is important to you, what matters in terms of how you conduct yourself.
Yeah.
And they've even seen studies before where it's far more effective to post how fast someone is traveling in their car, right? How much they're
right.
speeding.
Yeah, they have those roadside meters that tell you.
Yeah, yeah, because once they see, like, oh, man, I'm going 65 in a 45, people sort of shame themselves into saying, I see the mirror of myself.
Right.
And it's far more effective than putting, you know, two cop cars there all day long.
Yeah, because then that's just, these are guys are out to get me. They're literally out
right.
to get me.
Right, right.
And it's instead of it being a me versus them, it's a me versus me. I'm in competition with my own sense of self-being.
So, some things to think about here.
Cheating. I'll tell you what, if you guys have anything you would like to share with us about cheating, academic cheating, scholastic cheating, let us know. I would love to hear anyone's story I'm always game for any amusing tales about creative methods of cheating in a class.
Yeah.
If you're a teacher or if you're a student. And I'm very interested in people who can really be honest with themselves and look at like cases where they have cheated and then where they haven't cheated, or where like a part time in their life when they did cheat on tests and then they left that behind. Like, what changed in you? How did your attitude toward the subject matter change or toward school itself change? I think all that stuff's fascinating.
Are you like Sophocles and you say something like, I would prefer even to fail with honor than win by cheating?
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
So you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We are Below the Mind on Twitter, and on Facebook, we're just Stuff Below the Mind. Find us that way by search. But perhaps you want to do this anonymously and have us leave out your name.
Oh, if that's the case, feel free to send us an email at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.